You're listening to the Doing English podcast, the no-nonsense English learning show for professionals and experts, helping you forget English isn't your first language. Now, over to Julian.
Welcome to episode 37 of the Doing English podcast. This week's episode, and indeed next week's and the week after's as well, is a little bit different to the normal podcast. This is part one of a three-part interview that I did for the website fce.pl. Basically, the guy who runs that site, Dawid Radosky, contacted me and asked, would I do an interview for their website? The idea being that I would record my answers to his questions, and then that would be transcribed and translated into Polish, and then it'll go on the website there. But since I've got the recording here, I thought, hey, why not splice it up and post it here for you guys as well? Because all the questions are related to English learning, and I go into quite a few things that I haven't talked about here before. So again, a little bit different. It's an interview, although I'm basically just reading the questions and answering them orally. Part two will be next week, part three the week after. If you are Polish or understand Polish, check out Dawid's website, fce.pl. It's all about learning English as a second language. I have to admit, I don't really know much about the website because it's all in Polish and I don't understand Polish. So whether his views agree with mine or completely disagree with mine, I don't know. But hey, check it out anyway. Also, before we get started, as always, you can and should grab the transcript for this week's podcast episode by heading over to doingenglish.com. And if you sign up for the Doing English emails, just after signing up, you will get an email with a link that will show you how to sign up for the free resource area on the Doing English website, which will let you get access to, among other things, transcripts to all of these podcast episodes. So go over to doingenglish.com and sign up for your free access to the resource area. Okay, here we go with part one of this interview. So the first question was quite simply, hello, Julian, could you introduce yourself and tell us something more about you? Certainly. I guess I come from quite an eclectic background in that I started off as an artist and then I became an English teacher. I taught English at secondary school for quite a few years. From there, I became interested in academic research. I did a master's in applied linguistics at the University of Nottingham, then a PhD specializing in formulaic language, which is a kind of chunk of language. Then at some point, I became an artist again. And now I guess I'm very much primarily concerned with something which can only be described as a mix of art and second language education and research. I realize that probably doesn't make much sense, but the best example of the sort of thing that I do, if you go to doingenglish.com and check out the short film, which kind of presents my story as a language learner and a language teacher. That should give you a pretty good feel for the sort of thing that I do and the sort of place I'm coming from. I live in Tokyo, by the way. I speak Japanese at a pretty high level. Certainly not perfect. Still got room for improvement. But then, hey, who doesn't? Even some of my Japanese friends have room for improvement, if I'm honest. I also exclusively work with intermediate to high advanced English learners. I'm mainly interested in working with professionals, people who use English in their daily lives, whether it's in their business or in their work. For example, if they're, say, an IT professional who needs to keep up with the industry trends, whether they're, say, a doctor who needs to join medical conferences, I'm mostly interested in working with those kind of people. I also, not very publicly, actually, and people watching this on my YouTube channel might not even know this, I also do a certain amount of work supporting non-native English-speaking artists as well. This is something that you will be hearing more about from me in the future. But right now, it's very much a not-so-public sort of thing. Why is learning foreign languages so important? And the explanation here was, sometimes I hear, especially among young learners, I don't want to learn English because I don't need it. What would you say to those teenagers? This is a difficult question, and I guess my answer might be quite a controversial one, because actually, ignoring the fact that the school system is set up such that they probably have to study, whether they want to or not, actually, I would say, if you don't want to study English, if you can't see any need for English in your life, if you don't see any use for English in your life, then screw it, just don't bother. If you do, in the future, need the English, it's not too late. I'm very much of the school of thinking whereby, you know, there is no, you have to learn as a child if you're going to learn. I think that's a load of rubbish. I started learning Japanese when I was 23. And although I'm not a perfect Japanese speaker, but then who is? I know most of my Japanese friends are not perfect speakers. I'm a very high level in Japanese, high enough that I can live in this country on a day-to-day basis and live in exactly the same way as I would live in the UK, where I come from, in English. If you don't want to learn as a teenager and you're not forced to do it, then I say, don't worry about it. You can do it later. You can do it later if you need to do that. You know, life is too short for messing around with things that we don't want to do and that we can't see any use for. So, hey, what is the best method to learn a foreign language? This is one of the most common questions. I realize that there is no explicit answer, but how would you answer this question? Well, to be honest, the best method to learn a language is simply the method that you are actually going to do. The best method in the world is not going to help you if you don't actually do it. Conversely, it doesn't matter how bad the method is, even the worst method you can imagine will do something if you actually do it. Now, I guess I have an approach that I recommend. Again, I'm, as I said in my introduction, I'm mostly working with mid, high level intermediate to very advanced students. So my approach, notice that I'm saying approach, not method. I don't really like the term method, to be honest. You tend to hear it in sales pitches and things like, you know, the best method to learn English and things like that. It's all a load of rubbish. Any method, doesn't matter. Just do something, anything, just do it. That's the best method, just do something. How to learn vocabulary. They say that vocabulary is much more important than grammar. If so, then my second question is, should we stop learning grammar? What is your opinion? I would agree with that, I guess. All else being equal, it's better to know more words than more grammar. However, I think the idea is too black and white. You can't say, just study vocabulary and you'll be fine. Don't learn grammar. Grammar teaching and grammar learning is an unpopular topic these days. And I think part of that, again, advertising and marketing does have a big play a big part in that. I know certainly here in Japan, I don't know what the situation is like in Poland, but certainly in Japan, you see all these conversation schools and things, and they're basically playing on the fact that people study English in school for about 10 years and don't actually get very good at the language. And these conversation schools in their marketing will basically make it seem or make out that, or sometimes actually just explicitly say that it's because all you did was study grammar rules at school. Grammar's no good. If you learn grammar rules, you're never going to be able to speak English. So come to our school and we'll, you know, get you talking to a native speaker and you'll get fluent really, really quickly. But it's a load of rubbish, to be perfectly honest. I mean, these schools are as well known as actual public schools. These conversation schools are as well known as normal schools for completely failing to produce results. I mean, and the reason, it's nothing to do with the methodology. It's nothing to do with studying grammar or teaching grammar or what have you. It's to do with the sociolinguistic situation that people in Japan find themselves in. The reality being that most people simply don't actually use English, so they don't get good at it. There's other things to it. There's a lot of factors surrounding the supposed Japanese disposition. I mean, you can't see my bookshelves on the camera, but I've got piles and piles of books that try to answer the question of why Japan doesn't get good at English, and unfortunately for advertisers, it's nothing to do with grammar rules. So I guess that's my really long-winded way of saying that, you know, you trying to think, oh, I shouldn't study grammar or I should do this, is wrong. I mean, you just get on with it. You just learn it. I personally, in the approach that I recommend, I don't really focus on vocabulary or grammar. My area of speciality is formulaic language, chunks of language, phrases, expressions, conventionalized things that we say in certain situations. However, again, my approach is very much geared towards the higher levels. And with the levels that I'm working with, you know, if you can understand what I'm saying here in this video in English, you probably have enough vocabulary already. Of course, all else being equal, more vocabulary is always good. But if you can understand what I'm saying, but you're still having a problem of speaking, it's going to be because the vocabulary you have is not active vocabulary. That is, you have knowledge of the vocabulary, you just don't have a deep enough knowledge that you can combine that vocabulary into phrases and expressions and chunks of language. So then, in that case, my recommendation would be forget about vocabulary, forget about grammar, and focus on chunks, expressions, phrases. But it depends on the situation, it depends on the person. I realize it's not a very good answer. I guess, yeah, spend more time on vocabulary, less time on grammar rules. You'll be fine. How to learn idioms and phrasal verbs. A lot of learners struggle with phrasal verbs and idioms. I think this is due to the confusion brought about by translating single words, which are part of phrasal verbs, into the native language. What do you think about it, and how to study idioms and phrasal verbs? Well, idioms and phrasal verbs, first of all, are simply one kind of chunk, one kind of expression, one kind of phrase. And you've asked a question that I could sit here and talk about for hours and hours and hours. And in fact, in two-step speaking, which is my approach to studying or to learning, acquiring language as a high level learner, it's all about this, pretty much. Not specifically idioms and phrasal verbs, but acquiring and using chunks to sound fluent and natural. Where this gets difficult is, I mean, you've kind of answered the question yourself. People like to use dictionaries and they like to look up words with a translation in their native language. So they like to find the word dog and look it up in Japanese, for example, and find the word inu. So you get dog, inu. And then maybe you can check it in French as well if you really want it, and you get what, chien. I might have screwed the pronunciation of that up. It's been a long, long time since I learned French at school. The problem with that is, although it is fairly straightforward for some words, such as nouns, things like dog, a dog is going to be a dog pretty much regardless of what language it is. For the most part, translating is really not a very good way to do it, because words very rarely, again, apart from these very concrete nouns, words very, very rarely translate properly. There's always going to be a difference in nuance. Not only that, if you're just looking at a translation in your native language, you are not getting the full information of a word. Great example of this is the word cause. And cause, you know, means to make something become. But what you don't understand from just checking a translation in your native language is that cause tends to be used in negative collocations. That is, we say cause of death, cause an accident, cause a problem. We don't tend to say cause a happy time. Grammatical as that is, it sounds really, really weird because it has the wrong kind of cause, doesn't have that kind of positive nuance. And if you're looking at translations, and I realize I've kind of gone back to the topic of vocabulary here, if you're looking at translations, you really aren't doing yourself any favors because you're not getting this information. So the issue with idioms and phrasal verbs is then solved if you simply stop trying to translate things. I personally don't like to, I don't teach in a second language. I teach English in English. And the reason for that is because I think it's just a much, much better way to do things. I mean, we know, and I'm going to get into this in a moment because you asked about a natural way to learn. We know that people can understand far, far better than they can produce language. So certainly from the kind of people that I work with, they can understand my explanations in English. There's no need for translating. I guess if you're an absolute beginner, hey, you've got to start somewhere. You've got to start translating. But if you're an absolute beginner, well, I don't think you should be bothering with idioms and phrasal verbs anyway. Idioms are a popular thing to learn. However, the vast majority of idioms are not very useful most of the time. Many are very, very useful. Many are not. I would say one thing you shouldn't do is get lists of idioms and phrasal verbs. In fact, it's the same with vocabulary. Don't study lists. Get rid of lists. Lists of idioms are terrible. They really don't do anybody any favors simply because you don't get a feel for how often that idiom is used, what kind of situations that idiom is used. And you see these books and it'll have just like page after page after page which teaches you idiom, and you'll have one page will have a super high frequency idiom that's used all the time, and then the next page will have one. And you'll look it up in Corpora, which is a kind of a huge data bank of English. You'll look it up and it'll have like zero occurrences or something like that. It's just simply not used very often. Learning context, I guess. But if you're intermediate to advanced, you shouldn't be translating anyway. Therefore, it's exactly the same as learning any other kind of expression, phrase, chunk, vocabulary, etc. Yeah, that was a very long answer to that, wasn't it? So there we go. That is the first part of this three-part interview. I'll be back 7 days from now with part 2. So have a great 7 days and take care. And if you didn't already, head over to doingenglish.com, check out the Doing English film, and sign up for the Doing English daily emails, where apart from anything else, you can get access to a free resource area, including, among other things, transcripts for this very podcast. So go do that now, and I'll see you in 7 days. Goodbye.